What do you get when you combine simplified practice marketing, proven ROI strategy, and Van skate shoes? You get Mark Thackeray, of course. So lace up, grab your green smoothie, and get ready, because this is Dental Marketing Secrets, and this is Mark.
All right, my friends, welcome back. Another episode of the Dental Marketing Secrets podcast, where we provide you with actionable tips, techniques, strategy to help you grow your practice so that you can serve more patients and ultimately leave a greater legacy, because that is what's most important. And my name is Mark Thackeray. So excited to be here with you today. It is a cold, freezing day here in Salt Lake City. The wind is blowing, temperatures are down. There's not a ton of snow on the ground, but it's just cold. You know, one of those days you just want to stay inside. And I've got my trusty mug of hot water. This is something I get teased about all the time from my friends, and they love to make fun of me for my hot water, because I don't put anything in it. Usually it's just plain hot water. Sometimes I'll put in some fresh ginger, some lemon, or some honey or something like that, but most of the time, straight up hot water. But it's perfect for a day like today, so I've got that with me. But I'm excited about this episode, because I've got Brad James on the show, and we talk about getting rid of your bad PPOs. Because I don't know about you, but I talk to so many practices that are just fed up with certain PPOs. You know, it just gets worse and worse and worse. And so we talk about how to get rid of those, how to identify which ones aren't working for you, which ones aren't serving you. What are the first steps towards getting rid of a bad PPO? And then looking to replace that with some different options. And it's a tremendous conversation. And for those, let me introduce Brad a little bit. So Brad James is the director of partner development over at Clear. And he's been at Clear since May of 2018. And he leads their business development. He leads their strategic partnerships. And he focuses on helping Clear's 4,500 plus dentists by improving their practice management and business operations through their robust partner ecosystem. So it's a tremendous conversation. If you've ever wanted to cut ties and be free, liberate yourself from these bad PPOs, then you're going to want to listen in to this episode. So let's dive right into it. All right, you guys. Brad, hey, thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for spending the time with us.
Yeah, appreciate you for having me on, Mark.
Yeah, my pleasure. So why don't you take a minute or two and really just tell us a little bit about Clear. I know there's a lot of people in the audience that know about Clear. I'm sure there's some that don't. So give us an overview of Clear and how, and really why Dave started the company in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. So just give you guys some feedback on what it is that we do within the dental industry, is that we help practices implement and manage their in-house membership plans, which have been gaining a ton of traction recently, especially due to the fact of COVID. It's really expedited the popularity of and adoption with membership plans within the industry. And what we do is we look to streamline that whole process for practices, and we look to make it as scalable as possible. And just to give you some background on Dave and how the company really started was, so Dave's background is in engineering and tech. So he actually came from Microsoft and then had his own startup prior to Clear. And I think he was taking a break in between businesses, and he was actually catching up with one of his friends who is a dentist. And I think he was just going over with Dave how he was fairly tired of the low reimbursements that came with PPO participation.
Yeah, and heard I think that before.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think that's anything new. And I think Dave, just being the data-driven, curious guy that he is, just started doing some digging and looked through some research and compiled some data and found that there were two huge problems, one macro and one micro. And I guess I'll touch on the micro one first, just because it pertains to our company. He saw that uninsured patient behavior was a lot different than insured patients. And what I mean by that is that these uninsured patients, yeah, theoretically on paper, they look like they should be the most profitable patient when they're visiting the dentist. But we actually saw that they're visiting far less frequently. We see that the average is once every 2 years.
Okay.
And then on top of that, when they do decide to come in, these uninsured patients, they're accepting far less treatment. So the reality is that these uninsured patients are coming in less, they're accepting less treatment, and they're not as profitable as they should be on paper. So, so Dave, that's where we kind of found the membership plan idea and built Clear and developed our technology. And then on the macro level, what Dave found was that insurers are in complete control of the industry right now when it comes right. to pricing and controlling patient relationships and behavior. We're actually seeing that I believe the average is about $75 billion generated in revenue through insurers every year, and only 60% of that is going directly to patient care.
Wow.
Which means $30 billion is going into these companies' pockets. And that right there is pretty telling within itself. And it shows that this system is broken and that there are things that can be done to improve the relationship between doctor and patient. And that's essentially what you're looking to do with a membership plan. You're looking to bridge that gap between dentist and patient and really give both the best experience as possible. Have the practices improve patient loyalty, and also increase profits with those patients. And then additionally, on the patient side, you're going to make things a lot easier to understand for them. They're going to be getting the benefits that they want. And you're just going to be cutting out that insurance middleman who is really just dictating that whole relationship.
Yeah.
So that's really the origins of our company. And just to take a step back, if someone's listening right now and they're wondering what the heck a membership plan is, it's essentially just a process where the dentist is going to be creating these benefits for the patients, and you're going to be offering it to them at a subscription fee. So it's either the patient's paying monthly or annually, and they're going to be getting access to their preventive and hygiene care at a savings rate. And then additionally, another perk for being a member is that they'll receive discounts on all other procedures. And the tremendous part is we're seeing that these membership plan patients are spending more, they're visiting more, and they actually end up being the most profitable patients in the practice. Mm. That's what we're seeing.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I mean, that's a pretty staggering statistic that you shared, you know, in terms of how much it's generating, how much revenue it's generating, and how little is actually going towards patient care. You know, I mean, I think that's pretty telling. I'm sure there's other things involved, but, you know, I mean, I don't know many industries that have that type of, markup on a lot of those things. You know, I mean, it's very insightful. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about this then. And again, kind of moving away from that. And I know a lot of practices are looking to, you know, sever ties with some bad PPOs. Why do you think, what's stopping them from doing that?
It's a really good question. I mean, like we discussed earlier, it's nothing new that dentists are fairly tired of the traditional behemoths that are these large PPOs that really dictate everything. And I think some of it's, you know, just fear of breaking away from the norm. And
right.
another part of it is the fact that they understand that, especially if they're heavily PPO based, that they're going to be losing patients and some profits that come with being in network with those PPOs. But to really take a step back and to get topical, and I don't want to beat the dead horse at all when it comes to COVID, but this pandemic has really changed a lot of processes for better or for worse within dentistry. And I think right now, now more than ever, practices are really fed up with PPOs. I think that they saw that and even the ADA has backed this and has shown research that production's gone down and that costs have gone up. So production's gone down because of social distance in between patient visits, mm-hmm. and costs have gone up because of PPE infection control.
Right.
So a lot of these dentists are kind of banging their heads against the wall being like, come on, like you guys have never done me any favors in the past. And now it's getting worse when there's a global pandemic. But on top of that, I think there's just as much as it makes them more eager to get away from it, I think subconsciously it makes them even a bit more fearful to want to break away. Right. And you kind of understand that, you know, these dental insurance companies have really owned the market for so long, and it really is difficult when it comes to breaking away from what is considered normal and what's considered popular. And then on top of that, like I said, how people could potentially be afraid to lose some patients or profitability. I don't think all PPOs are necessarily bad or evil. Like, I think they're kind of a necessary evil to an extent. Some PPOs, they end up doing good things for practices and they can bring profits. And then other PPOs are really poor for certain practices, for the patients and for the front office team, and obviously for when it comes to revenue for the practices. So you really need to be analytical when you're looking at these plans and trying to figure out, you know, should I be stepping away from this one, or should I try to renegotiate my reimbursements with this other PPO plan? So there's really a lot of thinking that goes into it. And I think that's pretty intimidating for some of these practices. So that's really my two cents on the subject.
Yeah. And from the feedback that I get from a lot of practices is they're just scared. Yeah. Like you said, they're just afraid of the unknown. They don't. Yeah. There's that element of, I think there's going to be a percentage of the patient base, with that PPO that are going to leave. But I don't necessarily think that's true. We've helped a couple of practices that are, you know, become fee for service or gravitate more towards fee for service. And a lot of the patients have stayed loyal. You know, I mean, patients come there for a reason, because they trust you for the most part. I mean, yeah, there's other factors that go into the equation, but, you know, for the most part, they have so many options that, you know, nowadays it's really because they have the relationship with you in a lot of cases.
Yeah, absolutely. And to just build on your point, I think everyone always thinks about the practices that are looking to mitigate their dependency on PPOs. And that definitely is a large portion of dentists. But I think that there's another trend that's going on within the industry that's been a bit more quiet, are the fee-for-service practices that are starting to reconsider participating with certain PPOs because due to COVID. And I think that they are, I don't want to say desperate for new patients, but there certainly are some fee-for-service practices that are really weighing the risks that come with getting back in network with certain PPOs. So I think that's kind of a trend that I've heard with some of our partnerships at Clear with some other companies that are a bit more in the trenches with the PPO, with PPOs and insurance companies. But I always think that it's interesting to hear the other side of it for the practices that look on the surface. It looks like they're doing great and that they're killing it. But the reality is that they're also struggling as well. So It's important for practices on both ends of the spectrum to understand that, yes, there are people that are doing well throughout the pandemic and they're definitely opportunistic, but there are other practices that are also struggling, fee-for-service or PPO-based.
Yeah. Yeah. So Brad, walk us through, what are some of the first steps a practice should take if they're trying to, you know, either get rid of a bad PPO or possibly renegotiate? What would you say, what would you recommend they do?
Yeah. So I think the first step that they need to have in place, and it might seem like a shameless plug, but we've talked to a lot of companies that really specialize with helping practices optimize their PPO participation. And something they even recommend is that you want to have a membership plan in place. And the reason is as you're beginning to analyze and as you're beginning to really isolate which PPOs you want to get rid of, which ones you want to double down on, and which ones would you like to renegotiate, the reality is that you're going to understand that you're probably going to want to drop a couple of them, especially right. If you're pretty heavy with your PPO participation. So you really want to have the membership plan in place because you need to, the practice will need to understand that there is a risk involved with dropping PPOs and there's a ton of uncertainty. You can't just, there's not just a formula that says, all right, I'm going to lose 40% of my patients if I drop this PPO and I know that the other 60% will stay with me and everything will be great. It can be better than that. It can be worse.
Right.
But having a membership plan in place will really mitigate that chance of losing a lot of those patients, because you want to make sure you have the membership plan in place about 6 to 12 months outside of when you plan on dropping that certain PPO. And you also want to make sure that you're getting ahead of the curve. So you want to be educating your patients that are in network with that particular insurance plan. And you want to just notify them that you're going to be dropping the plan, but that you have a membership plan in place. It's much easier to understand. There's no middleman in the way. And the practice ends up saving money, or the practice ends up making more money off it, and the patient ends up saving more money. The more real you are with the patient, I think the more that they'll appreciate it, and just let them know why you're dropping the PPO, why you have a membership plan in place, and why it's great for them. So just having the membership plan in place so that you can prepare those patients to potentially join it on that PPO that you're dropping will really help wonders as a first step.
Yeah. And I love what you said, Brad, just how it's all about being real with the patients, you know, helping them understand, you know, the whys behind what you're doing, and really, you know, the strings that a lot of these PPOs are pulling, you know, that dictate, sometimes they, you know, I mean, they can dictate what type of filling you use, you know, I mean, and just how it's, man, it can be really frightening a little bit, you know, if you're a patient and they're only using this particular filling because they get reimbursed on that, even though it might not be the best option. So I think helping educate patients on, you know, this is what insurance can look like, you know, and it's kind of a dirty look to it, you know, and that's why we're moving away from that, because we don't want to be, you know, we don't want to be told what to do, you know, for your care. You know, we're the ones who have the relationship. We know your history. We know what you're up against and what you're looking for. We want to do the best work possible. And sometimes that necessitates a dropping a PPO.
Yeah. Yeah. And to build on that, just how there's always this skepticism that comes with like insurers for patients and the practice. Mm-hmm. We actually conducted a focus groups with hundreds and thousands of uninsured patients. And we even had a couple uninsured patients say that they didn't trust insurance companies, and why they have no coverage is because that they thought that the insurance companies were out to get them, or that they would end up getting them down at some point down the road. It's definitely a bit of a paranoid stance, but I think everyone has that mindset, whether it's subconscious or whether they're actively thinking that way.
Yeah, no, and it's true. And you look at some of the, you know, I mean, some of the requirements, the stipulations they put in place, and it does kind of make you think, well, man, what's the deal? Are they really trying to help me, or are they just trying to get my money?
Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk about, what about dental discount plans? You know, those are popping up all over the place too. I know they're not the same thing. So talk a little bit about the differences there and why, you know, are those a good option?
Yeah. So I think that there's some ambiguity when it comes to a discount plan and a membership plan. I think sometimes it can be confused because there are so many different terms there are so many different terms for membership plans out there. Some practices call them a savings plan. Right. Some practices call their discount plans a savings plan. So there, it can really get murky on what's what, but fundamentally a dental discount plan is different because they're typically managed by a third party such as a Carrington, or a lot of them are even sponsored by PPOs. So the Aetnas of the world, or the Deltas.
Right.
So you know that there's still this this third party ownership and this PPO meddling, if you will, that comes with a discount plan. And fundamentally, the patients with a discount plan, what they're doing is it doesn't improve loyalty to that specific practice at all. It's in fact the same principle that comes with a PPO. The patient is going to be paying for some type of network of dentists, and that's ultimately what a discount plan is. All the patient's doing is paying a patient fee that goes directly to the discount plan. So the dentist does not profit from that patient fee. And with that patient fee, they're only going to be getting access to discounts. So they're still going to be have to paying out of pocket, whether they're getting a cleaning or whether they have some treatment to get done. And we're also just seeing that with the discount plans, not only are you not improving the loyalty, but the patients just don't really understand the perks and the benefits that come with it. And it also doesn't create any recurring revenue. With the membership plan, whether your patient's paying monthly or annually, you're improving your cash flow. And you hear all the time that cash flow is king. When you're getting that recurring revenue, that's something that you can depend on, whether your doors are closed or not. You know that it's coming through. With a discount plan, it's more or less the same. You're dependent on that patient to come in and visit and to pay out of pocket. So you really don't know ultimately whether a patient is going to be compliant and visit the recommended 2 times a year, assuming that they're not a periodontal patient, that they're just coming in 2 times a year. But the reality is that a lot of patients are not as consistent with what's recommended by the ADA.
Yeah. And that's one of the challenges I've seen with discount plans is that they'll, you know, a lot of people, like you said, Brad, that there's a lot of confusion surrounding why even have a discount plan, because they're just really opting into the plan because they're staring at a huge treatment plan, you know, and they're, you know, and they don't have insurance. And so the only reason they do it is because you're giving them a discount. There's no loyalty. It doesn't tie them back in, you know, for the next year or anything like that. And so, yeah, they just do. It's really kind of a one-time deal for a lot of patients.
Mm-hmm. And if you're just looking at an economic scale, look how many businesses are trending towards subscriptions and memberships and loyalty rewards programs. I joke around with some of my colleagues, and it's like you'd have a tougher time finding a company that doesn't offer some type of membership plan and loyalty plan these days, and it's because all these businesses understand that cash flow is king and that it's better to have a recurring revenue model as opposed to a one-off and hoping that consumer, or in our case, patient, abides by the recommended treatment protocol.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I totally agree with that. So let's look at if you're trying to determine how would you define a bad PPO, if you should drop it, what data points are you looking at to make that determination?
Sure. So I'll definitely go over a couple of points, but just a disclaimer, we did recently work with a couple of other third parties, and we came out with this ebook that helps practices just kind of understand certain steps when it comes to dropping PPOs. So we do have the full breakdown in there, but I know the big things that you want to start with is the practice needs to review their insurance agreements. And they'll need to analyze their practice management software data. And my understanding is, prior to anything, actually, you want to make sure that your fee schedule is up to date, which a lot of practices, believe it or not, are guilty of sometimes not having their UCR fees and their fee schedule up to date. So you definitely want to make sure that's current. And then beyond that, when you're really starting to get analytical and look into it, you want to make sure that you're noting the net production and how many patients are on each PPO plan. So I think a lot of the terminology that the practice management software uses is plan patients. Mm-hmm. And you ultimately want to be able to analyze the net production and divide it by the amount of plan patients that you have. And that should give you some type of weight on which plans which plans are more profitable and which ones are less profitable. And then on top of that, beyond the net production and how many patients are on each plan, you want to also be able to look at the treatment frequency by procedure code. And the reason you want to do that is because you just want to figure out which procedures you're churning out most efficiently and most effectively. And then on top of that, you want to be able to see which procedures are ultimately potentially losing you money and which ones are most profitable. So that's where it starts to get a bit mathy and analytical. And I think sometimes people can sometimes get intimidated, but like I said, we break it down the playbook for what types of terms you want to look for in your practice management software. And then ultimately you do want to figure out in your agreement, you know, what's the termination notice when it comes to, if it does come to the point where you say, all right, we need to drop this PPO, you need to be able to effectively communicate with that PPO company and give them a fair warning on when you're going to be terminating that plan with them, because you definitely want to abide by the agreement with that particular PPO.
Yeah. So there's definitely, yeah, a number of steps involved. So yeah, if you're listening and that's something you, that you're going to head down that path, be sure to grab the ebook that Brad and Claire have put together. It's called, is it the 7 steps to drop your bad PPO? Is that the one?
Yeah, exactly. And, cool. And when we say bad PPO, I just want to clarify, we're just helping practices get away from certain dependency. I don't think we necessarily think that all PPOs are bad. It's just, we want to make sure whichever ones are underperforming, you should definitely reevaluate. And there is a lot of strategy that comes with it. And honestly, it ultimately comes to that you want to identify the most valuable codes. That could be frequency on how many times you're accept or that treatment is being accepted, or maybe it brings in the most revenue for your practice. And then additionally, you just want to create, after IDing those most valuable codes, you want to create a fee schedule proposal and then send it to the PPO admin. And then the rest is, you kind of cross your fingers there and hopefully everything goes well when it comes to the negotiation process.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense. You know, if you just outline that out, Brad, it makes a lot of sense to me. You know, you're looking, kind of diving into the numbers, how many patients are on this particular plan, you know, what is the, like you said, the efficiency, the efficacy of that particular treatment. You're just really looking at it from a data-driven, mindset essentially, and just to see, okay, is this, are my worries founded or unfounded? You know, I mean, if we drop sever ties with this PPO, am I going to have a mass exodus of patients that leave the practice, or in reality, or is it 7 patients, you know? So just knowing your numbers, you know, plays a big part in determining, okay, does this make a lot of sense?
Yeah. And I think if a practice has never dropped a PPO in the first place, you definitely do want to, test the waters with those plans that have a smaller amount of patients, or maybe they are just absolutely bleeding your revenue dry. So those are the types of plans where it's just like there's no risk involved. Those are the ones where you really want to try those ones first. Do it one at a time. Get you and your front office team some confidence on carrying out these processes. So once it comes time to potentially dropping a PPO where there are more patients, or maybe there's a bit more revenue involved with it, or maybe there's a big employer in your area that that uses that particular PPO and you're afraid of losing those patients. Whatever it is, you want to make sure that you gain confidence so that when it does come time to that, that your team is familiar with it and that you guys kind of have that swagger when it comes to having that conversation with PPOs.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So getting into more of the specifics on that. So when you're, as you're considering dropping PPOs, what are you looking at in terms of a patient facing messaging? You know, what does the message look like towards patients? It's going to be an adjustment for them as well. So how do you walk patients through a transition like that?
Yeah. So the first thing you want to do is you definitely want to identify which patients are going to be affected by dropping that particular PPO. And I think also internally, you'll have the dentist and their team will have to come up with a plan on whether they're going to plan on basically taking care of the reimbursements for the patient or not. We definitely recommend that the practice does that because it's a better patient experience. But we understand that not all practices can do it, but I think that understanding whether you're going to help the patient with that regard or not is an enormous step. And then once you essentially are executing this plan, you always want to make sure that you're communicating these changes with the patients. And I would probably recommend that you want to be able to email these patients. That's the number one way to communicate with them, or text, whichever way your practice has whatever effective ways of communication your practice has in place, you want to make sure that you have a 120 and 90 day and a 30 day plan, or a 90 day, 60 day, 30 day plan with communicating to those particular patients. And then outside of email, you obviously want to be able to call them if possible, but not everyone has that bandwidth with their front office team. So that's completely optional. That's really if you're looking to bring a great patient experience to them. And then the final step is probably the most obvious, but sometimes practices can drop the ball here, is if any of these patients do end up visiting you while you're planning on dropping these PPOs, make sure your front office team is communicating with them. Make sure the hygienist is having that conversation. And obviously making sure that the dentists and office managers have those conversations with the patients, just so that they're in full understanding of the why and how does it affect me. And as soon as you give the patient peace of mind, it's really not that complicated. I actually think that one of the many downfalls of insurance is that patients don't fully understand what's actually going to benefit them or where are they actually going to be saving money. So if you just are very straightforward and transparent with the patient, they'll appreciate it. And obviously if you have the membership plan in place, educate the patient, and I think they'll be able to see at a high level. There's no more complexities that come with pre-approvals or maximums or these huge contracts. It's very cut and dry, and we've seen that it really does improve the relationship between doctor and patient.
Absolutely. And that whole transparency of communication and explanation of your motives. And I, if you're doing that from day one, you know, like you said, whether it's 120 days out, 90 days out, and you're doing it multiple ways, text, via email, in office conversations, then people respond to that. You know, I mean, they can see that, like you said, you're not trying to generate more money or, you know, squeeze another dollar out of them, but it's really to make it a simpler process overall. So you have, you know, less hoops to go through and really your goal is to describe your reason, you know, your reasoning through in benefits that are directly relatable by the patient, you know? So you're trying to translate all the reasons why you're doing this into patient specific benefits. So yeah, like you said, no more pre-authorizations, you know, no more waiting periods, no more, and just go down the line of the many reasons why you're making this change. And a lot of them respond to that, you know, and especially if you're the one who initiates that conversation, a lot of times you have the ability to set the proper context and control the message overall. And people respond really well to that.
Absolutely.
So, okay. Once you get, you've moved away. We've kind of gone through this process, right? We're starting to move away from the bad PPOs. We have the new membership plan. How do you drive patients towards that plan? I'm guessing, you know, if you're having those conversations, that would naturally come up in those conversations with patients, whether that's on the phone, whether that's probably in an email as well, just to start planting the seed and have a discussion around the membership plan. What else would you recommend, Brad, for that?
Yeah, so I would say with the patients in particular, like you said, you just want to be able to communicate with them in the best way possible. And also something to take into account, whether it pertains to the membership plan or whether we're just talking more generally, is when you're dropping a PPO, you're essentially dropping a channel of marketing. Because a lot of these practices should really think about the PPO participation as a marketing channel. They understand that, okay, I'm going to be taking a hit with my UCR fees with this particular PPO, and here's my reimbursement, but I'm okay with that because my marketing budget will be smaller. And we do see that with PPO dependent practices, they typically have between a 2-4% marketing budget when it comes to their overall budget. But these practices do have to realize that the more PPOs they're going to be dropping and the more they start to trend towards fee for service, they're going to have to begin to pick up their marketing. In fact, we see that full fee for service practices typically have a marketing budget of 8% or higher. And that's something the practices will definitely need to take into account, is whether it's, like we said, with the membership plan patients or just retaining or attracting new patients to kind of compensate on that loss of patients that comes with dropping PPOs. You want to be able that you have an effective marketing strategy in place. With the membership plan in particular, the great thing is if you decide to use a platform like Clear, we have a whole like marketing library that these that our customers have access to and they can use in social media campaigns or they can use with web ads or print ads. And we make sure that we want to mitigate those costs when it comes to at least marketing to their patients that would qualify for joining the membership plan, which is heavily uninsured. And then obviously for the PPO patients that you're dropping that particular plan. So you really just want to make sure it's communication and the way that you're marketing to these patients that are interested in the membership plan. That's the best way to get them on. And something that we can do with a lot of our customers and prospects is we'll make sure that they have an outlet and that they have the resources necessary to help them out, whether it's in-office marketing materials or whether it's activating dormant patients or maybe it's even external marketing. You definitely have to be a bit more strategic when it comes to dropping certain PPOs.
Yeah, that's a good point to remember is because, yeah, they're referral sources for a lot of practices. And when you sever those ties, you obviously sever those or forfeit the opportunity to receive referrals from that source. And so, yeah, naturally, you're going to need to supplement the rest of your marketing and really beef that up, you know, so to speak. And so just be prepared for that. I had a question too, Brad, on that just came up. That's come up a couple of times. You know, when I've talked with practices that are considering a membership plan, a lot of them fear that it is. Again, I think it just comes down to the confusion surrounding membership plan and a discount plan, because a lot of them think of a membership plan as, oh, I don't want to discount my services. So can you speak to that for a minute?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a great question. We hear all the time from some of our prospects that they're afraid of cannibalizing their cash paying patients. And I think a lot of it just kind of trends back towards the theory that these fee-for-service patients, the uninsured patients on paper look great and that they should be very profitable, but the data and the research, and we've yet to have a practice debunk in, and we've talked to tens of thousands of practices that their uninsured patients do visit less frequently and that they accept less treatment. And what's really interesting that we've seen, because we've been pulling the raw data from some of our customers' practice management software, and we've been analyzing and crunching numbers, and it's really impressive. We're seeing that as soon as an uninsured patient joins onto a membership plan, we're seeing that their behavior trends more towards and mimics more of a insured patient behavior as opposed to the former uninsured patient behaviors of visiting less and accepting less treatment. And we've seen the average across all of our customers is that we're seeing that that membership plan patients are twice as profitable as uninsured patients, as the other uninsured patients at the practice with no coverage. So yes, in theory, it looks like you're going to be hurting your bottom line, but the reality is that the more likely you're getting these patients to commit to their hygiene, to commit to their preventive and diagnostic care, the more likely they are to accept more treatment. And especially when they're presented with some type of discount, you know, 80% or 90% of something is better than 100% of nothing. Right. So you definitely want to implement these practices. And like I've said, the profits are just extremely consistent in the numbers that we're seeing. The average is 2.1 times increase with overall patient production, seen as high as 3.7 times increase in production and profitability. So that's just something that we're seeing. And it's something that some of the practices have a tough time conceptualizing, but a lot of our customers are really seeing benefits with not only just the recurring revenue structure and the cash flow, but also from the subscription fees, but also they're seeing huge profits when it comes to increases in case acceptance, because we do see that membership plan patients accept 50 to 75% more treatment than uninsured patients.
Wow. That's awesome. That is awesome. So, okay, so we've kind of gone through all the steps, and as you've broken it down that way, it does make it a lot easier to see, okay, this, I feel better about doing this, a lot more manageable than I think a lot of people think. You know, it's, yeah, they have, kind of have this fear surrounding dropping PPOs, and it's going to be complex, it's going to be, you know, multi-layered and all that, but it's really pretty straightforward. Can you give us an example of you know, a practice that has done that, has gone through the process, severed ties with some bad PPOs, established a membership plan. What does it look like for them now? Can you share some of those details?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's definitely out there, and there are plenty of case studies, but we do have one in particular with in our ebook, in the seven steps to dropping your bad PPOs. We do have a story from Dr. Chad Johnson, and it just goes into detail, and there's even a video with it, but he essentially talks about how he fully went fee for service. He's reduced his clinical hours from 2000 to 1000 hours a year. So he's basically cut that in half. And I think a lot of practices really like hearing from their peers and just hearing their stories about how, you know, what were the difficulties they met? What were the smooth parts? You know, what can they expect? What can they anticipate? So we have that story on the ebook, and just to let people know, if they do want to visit and download that ebook, just visit clearkleer.com. We have a resources tab. And if you go to the resources tab, you just click on ebook, and then you'll be able to find pretty quickly the seven steps to dropping your bad PPOs playbook.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. So we'll make sure to link that up in the show notes for this particular episode, but I've downloaded a copy, and that's honestly one of the reasons why I'm talking with Brad right now, is because it's a very informative resource. You know, it's just the ebook that you download, and it has all the steps written out, and it makes it a lot more simple than you think it will. So go on there. It's clear.com. Go to the resources tab. It's going to be listed right underneath there. So last, we've talked about some of the, what other resources are on there? Cause I know you guys have a pretty hefty resource library, and then I'll ask you if there's any other comments you want to make before we kind of wrap this all up.
I mean, we have a very extensive resources library on our website. I mean, there's videos, there's webinars, podcasts, ebooks, blogs, you name it. And we're looking to not only educate the dental industry on membership plans and our mission of liberating dental care, as we call it, but we're also looking to provide resources that practice can benefit from, that aren't only just pertaining to membership plans, because we do understand that it's pretty niche. The average practice has about 25% uninsured patients. So we're always looking to make sure that we are bringing best practices that can impact their business operations. And I will say that we look to stay away from the clinical side, because we are not clinicians by any means. But if it comes to their practice management and business operations, we're always looking to bring that value add to any type of reader or practice or customer within our platform.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. So Brad, any last comments before we sign off?
No. This has been a great experience, and hopefully we can do it again down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I will ask one more thing. So if people do want to get in touch with you or maybe learn more about Clear, is just the website the best option, or where should they go?
Oh, they can, if you guys want, you can also just contact me via email. It's really easy. It's just brad@clearkleer.com. And I'm happy to answer any questions, or if you guys want to get in touch and learn more about the platform.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, that's thank you so much, Brad. It's Brad James of Clear. He's the director of partner development over there. And thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me on, Mark. It's been a blast.
Did you enjoy this episode of the Dental Marketing Secrets Podcast? Head on over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. And for more proven marketing strategies to grow your practice, visit practicerocket.net.